Les colloques du Collège de France.
Bonjour, bon après-midi à tous et à toutes. This will be the extent of my contribution in French today. I would have loved to, because it's a real honor to be here at the Collège de France. I must thank our friend and colleague, Professor Mufene, and of course, the Collège de France for the hospitality and the wonderful opportunity to share my work with all of you. But because there is a lot of material and I wanted also to be spontaneous, I decided to not try to render everything in French and I stick to English. But again, if there are people who want to ask questions in English, in French, that's absolutely fine. So I know that Sally mentioned that I'm a literary scholar by training, but actually I chose to show materials mostly from my work on dance. So let's go. I have been using creolization for about 10 or 15 years now as a tool, the theory. I'm not a linguist. Maybe I'm a linguist monkey, but really I am looking at creolization as a theoretical tool to understand cultural processes across the Atlantic and Indian Ocean world. So this is what I mean by the connected oceans. And I have moved away, as we all have, of course, from this idea of a binary to the concept of a swirl, which is a model for me, for creolization theory, a swirl that can explain better the relation, particularly when you think of the Indian Ocean world, pre-colonial, colonial, and post-colonial temporalities, multiple colonial players. We have already seen how the French are interacting with the Dutch, with the Portuguese, and so on. So that's what I mean by that. Multiple colonial players in any space, different forms of unfree labor, enslavement, indentured labor, and so on. These are all the ways in which people move across the connected oceans. And of course, for me, very important, as for many of us here, the role of various kinds of intermediaries and cultural brokers. And bringing all this together, I have also been thinking of the archipelago as a key, which is my title, to explain creolization and also the memory of creolization in sites that are widely separated today by geography, imperial history, post-colonial trajectories of development, geopolitics, and so on. So all this started for me when, I mean, even though, of course, as somebody, I was actually trained in comparative philology of the old Germanic languages. So, of course, we learned about creoles and pigeons and so on in those days. So it's not that I wasn't familiar with the idea of creolization, but I actually started thinking more seriously about it during this project that I ran, which was, as the title said, about kinetic transnationalism and Afro-diasporic rhythm cultures. That was the title of the project for which I got the funding. But and the idea was to move to transoceanic frames, because that's what happened to the transnational. It got replaced in the course of the 5 years, because we started thinking more about the oceans. And as a result, we also started thinking seriously about creolization rather than other models gradient in post-colonial studies like diaspora, hybridity, etc. I found creolization more useful as a way to understand what was going on when certain dances were moving around the Atlantic world and creating new forms. And you can see the definition of creolization that I developed for the project and that I continue more or less to use. Now, in the course of this project, two frames came through. One was this idea of the Creole Atlantic, and that was the coinage of my project postdoc, who is now, working independently at Paris Nanterre, the same institution that our previous speaker was from. And she started and is still working on the idea of the Creole Atlantic, not just the Black Atlantic, through the idea of the dances that move around the space. And I took this further also and started thinking about the Indian Ocean and Atlantic cultural systems as also transoceanically creolized and as therefore somehow connected and yet also divergent. So how did we do all this? We started with creolized partner dances, salsa, tango, kizomba, a lot of these dances, social demotic dances that are danced in Paris a lot, in fact. So from here, we could see this very obvious kind of aller-retour map, of the roots of enslavement, in mostly the Black Atlantic. But you can see that, of course, the routes also take us to the Indian Ocean world, and that was a challenge of the project. Now, since in the Indian Ocean world, we realized that no creolized partner dance forms had emerged. That was also interesting, and we were working on why that did not happen. So you have no forms of, like, say, salsa or tango in the Indian Ocean, but you did have something else, and that was the quadrille. So I focused a lot on the quadrille as a connector at a certain historical moment and a barometer to creolization in the Atlantic and Indian Ocean worlds. Now, because again of time, I won't show all the videos. I think in this audience, pretty much people would know what the Otai feels like from Martinique. So this is an obvious starting point to think about the creolized quadrille anywhere in the world. Many quadrille forms in the Caribbean, not just the Otai. But okay, it started without my inclination. But you see, a little bit. These are social forms, and that was what was interesting. Folklorized, but still people want to dance them for social purposes. So what we then realized is that it's not just the Caribbean that was an Atlantic home for the creolized quadrille. We also discovered some still present but marginalized forms in West Africa in course of our research. For example, we discovered, really, because even in Côte d'Ivoire, in Abidjan, people were very unaware of this dance, the bolo. And we went there and... This is the kind of thing that starts... irritating one. Now, who wants to, we can hear about the bolo later, but I will move on. But this was a kind of a quadrille form that we discovered really in the very border of Liberia and Côte d'Ivoire. And that was very interesting because it allowed us to see and show how creolized quadrilles were actually developing on both sides of the Atlantic. Now, and of course, it was because of all those swirls that we saw earlier with Sierra Leone and the returning, you know, people from the Atlantic world and so on. So from here, one started thinking about the Creole Atlantic as comprised or disaggregated into smaller circuits, if you like, of creolization. Some circuits are happening in the Caribbean, some circuits are prevailing in the West African coast, and then they are connecting through, you know, again, movements. So there's the smaller circuits are also becoming larger circuits. And this is how material, ideas, embodied movements, and sculpture really is creolizing across, continuously swirling across the Atlantic world. But this again was the thread we took to the Indian Ocean world, and we had quite a delightful set of research adventures following the creolized quadrille all over the Mascarenes and Seychelles islands. Now, hopefully, these will not give us any trouble. Who knows? This my slides are starting to behave badly. Okay, I will just use this. These are my videos I took while being while traveling in the Indian Ocean, looking out for different forms of creolized quadrilles in the Indian Ocean world that allowed me to compare what was going on there or had happened there to the Atlantic world. So this was the second step, connecting the Atlantic world to the Indian Ocean world through forms such as the quadrille, which had historically emerged at the same time. But what was interesting for me is that while, of course, you think that, okay, there are islands in the Caribbean, there are islands in the, you know, the Mascarenes or the Seychelles, these are archipelagos, I was actually also interested in what was going on coastal enclaves, such as what we saw the bolo dance in on the coast, of Côte d'Ivoire. So for me, from the beginning, the idea of transoceanic creolization was also definitely involving enclaves on coasts as well as islands in both oceans. And this is how I started, therefore, on the one hand, tracking different kinds of creolized quadrilles under the name of Sega, very famous name, in the Indian Ocean world through, if you like, looking at the archive as well as the repertoire. And I also managed to see and enjoy a lot of these performances. Again, I'm going to skip over them because they're always going to be there, and if people want to see them, we can always go back to them and have a look as to how they differ. But there's Maloya. And so I started thinking of a spectrum. On the one hand, you have dancers which don't present themselves as quadrilles, such as the Maloya, but they are really very similar in terms of if you like, a kind of morphology or taxonomy. And of course, the rhythm of Sega unites them all. And you have more European-looking Sega salon, and they even use that term from, say, Rodrigues Island in Mauritius. But a very kind of touristic Sega in Mauritius that you'll see will only have, like, you know, they will not have that closed couple embrace that you can see, and figures, very specific figures that you see in Cadreal formations. But what is very interesting is that you can even, I see that in the Indian Sega Bhojpuri, you know, you even have a sort of movement that the women bring on, which for me is really a continuum with the obviously creolized Sega, which is more Cadreal-like. Hopefully they'll start moving soon. Oh, God, no, they're not moving. Oh, yes, they are. So I think it's nice to see how they are, the way they move their saris is really similar to how the women are moving the big skirts in the more Europeanized costuming. And the way they also turn. These are really not dancing forms that you would perhaps see very easily in India. But again, we can think about that in the Q&A as well, or the discussion. So what I started getting interested in are, just like we saw those little swirls in the Atlantic world, what were similar little swirls of circuits of creolization in the Indian Ocean world? So of course, again, we know that the Western Indian Ocean world with the archipelagos are very fertile grounds for creolization of culture. But I took the story to Goa, and I started looking at certain dance forms, which for me were evidently Cadreal-like, but nobody was calling them that in India. Such as that's called the Goan Mando, and I did some research on that, and I argued quite vociferously that this is a form of an Indic Creole Cadreal, and I think people kind of started agreeing with me on that. So I think this merits seeing a little bit of it. Let us try to... What I wanted to show there with that little comment about the Kafrinya also, that at a certain point, these creolized Cadreal forms that are looking like a circuit within the Western Indian Ocean world, touching Goa on the one side and the Mascarenes and the Seychelles on the other, are also stretching to Southeast Asian worlds. And you have certain Cadreal-like forms in Malacca, in, you know, different parts of, you know, I'm sure of Batavia. I mean, there are still Sri Lanka, of course. So there are, and Hugo Cardoso actually has been a great help for me in joining these particular dots. So in other words, my notion of creolization started really expanding, and I started thinking about various kinds of cultural brokers in the transoceanic frame, connecting islands, coast, and hinterlands in different, in both the oceans that I was interested in. And this, of course, enables us to go beyond this rather, you know, this master-slave dialectic of the plantation towards different kinds of cultural brokers and movers and shakers, you know, in these worlds, creating a sort of creolization, making creolization a process that, of course, goes way beyond the biological towards proximity, cohabitation, negotiation, collaboration, compromise, etc. And I'm very interested also in the roles of very conservative mercantile communities in this, who are almost the motors of creolization without overtly getting creolized themselves, or are they in some other way that is not apparent to us looking through the obvious lenses. So what I'm doing now is I'm moved away from the dance and the music, and I'm looking at other forms of transoceanic creolized culture, for example, food, of course. So I'm very interested in this form of stuffed gourds, which come evidently from the Armenian, Turkic Armenian dolma, which of course entered the South Asian space through land, not sea. And all over Southeast Asia and some parts of coastal South Asia, you have these gourds, not vine leaves, because you don't get vine leaves in South and Southeast Asia, but you have gourds. So these gourds have been hollowed out and stuffed with protein, just like dolmas are. And they are often even, for example, in Calcutta, where I come from, we call them dolma, but we no longer use a vine leaf. We use an indigenous gourd. So in these ways, you can develop certain taxonomies of difference and similarity and really track how culture travels and also kind of remains both constant and divergent. And this, for me, is the excitement about creolization and helps us also think beyond the urge for standardization, which we heard also in a previous paper, that it's maybe okay to not be standardized because certain other things can happen and other kinds of cultural genesis can continue. So where is all this going on? For me, all these swirls really are therefore not just happening in islands, but ports and forts are very important. And I am interested in seeing how different centrifugal and centripetal forces move culture in and out of these nodes and hubs. The question again is who motors these creolizing forces? Who are the cultural tastemakers? And for me, therefore, enclaves where such motors, you know, groups of motors congregate, are really important. And my vision now of the project I want to do now, which is called Fort Creole, is really looking at an arc of enclaves all the way from actually, El Mina has always been my central point in thinking about these enclaves. And from El Mina, I'm both looking eastward and westward. So I hope to go to Brazil and see Dutch Brazil in October to check if that can also be brought into the frame. The theoretical way, because I'm a theorist of culture, and the theory that I'm developing, the apparatus that helps me do this, is really from a body of thought which is called archipelagic. And of course, this takes from the topology or topography of archipelagos, but moves it to a more tropological domain, if you like, to think metaphorically and like a model. You can join dots, you can zoom out, though that is, for example, the DeGraaf Atlas, which the VOC created to help navigate across these enclaves that were forming across the Indian Ocean world. But of course, you can also zoom in and you see the density of enclaves at an early period on the Coromandel and Malabar coast, and that was really the basis of the paper by Hugo Cardoso earlier, where we saw how Pondicherry was intercalated with places like Nagapattinam, Trankebar, and so on, but also there was movement between the Malabar coast and the Coromandel coast. All these really are ways in which you zoom out, but then if you join the dots and zoom in, you can also see some very interesting fortification similarities between spaces as widely dispersed as El Mina and Nagapattinam. And the question really is, what do we do with these similarities? What do they tell us today about the past, and how can we rethink the present in that through this lens? So my idea then is to reconceptualize the shape of British India through this idea of Fort Creole as Creole Indias, and connect it archipelagically to other littoral spaces in particular. And in that way, perhaps we can think also how heritage is being utilized and mobilized differently across the oceans. For example, I would like to just make you listen to this very interesting person. So, woman of Gujarati heritage who lives in New York, and she's singing in Cape Verdean Creole about Angola. You know, how do we explicate these cultural experiments, if you like, or are they experiments? Okay, it's nice to end on the word sabura. It's a nice Creole word. So in conclusion, I just want to say, you know, there is a lot I would like to do with this idea of swirling circuits through which creolization connects enclaves across the coastlines of the Atlantic and Indian Ocean worlds, which allow us to see these enclaves as connected archipelagically, ways beyond continental thinking, nation-state formations, and all these constrictions through which we normally, language differences and so on. This is an alternative way for me of thinking about post-coloniality through the ocean that's not homogenized or aggregated into some sort of lost whole, a search for authenticity. Rather, we think about improvised, ephemeral, embodied, but extremely important dimensions of culture. And we can think, therefore, not just about what existed in the past, but how the past is activated in the present. We don't just worry about purity and authenticity, but an archipelago of what I call creolized cultural fragments, which combine, recombine, disappear, and appear in unpredictable swirls of dispersal and reassemblage. So thank you very much, and let's hope we have some discussion. Thanks.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.